connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Hello and welcome to NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride for the World Wide Web. I'm your co-host this week, Galen.
And I'm your host this week, Matthew Marissa. And I'm so excited. So this is actually kind of embarrassing because we're recording this a week in advance. Today is the day that our previous episode came out, which is April 13th, which is a very special day for someone.
Yes.
Very close to me.
Someone really important, really important for internet culture.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, it's it makes the rounds every year, and we try, you know, I think we're finally going to just come out and say it right now.
At 3, 2, 1,
John is making out his tunes.
Wait, hold on. What'd you say? I said it's Homestuck Day.
But it's also the Neil banging out his tunes in 2006.
Who's Neil? Neil Cicierica?
Who's John? John D's Nuts?
Yes! Gotcha! I've been waiting all year for this!
Oh, damn it.
Tag your friends to totally April 13th, John D's Nuts them.
I got diagnosed with John D's. But yes,
it's nothing to laugh at. It's a horrible illness.
But yes, today is a special day for multiple reasons. It's a good meme holiday.
A double meme holiday.
A double meme holiday. You don't often get that.
Yeah. So it's Neil banging out his tunes day, which is on a Thursday. It's also Homestuck Day, which I have seen actually like nothing about on the internet.
Yeah.
It's like Homestuck has just kind of disappeared. Ever since the Sarah Zed debacle, where she got sued, it's like, all right, Homestuck's not saying anything. People aren't saying anything about Homestuck. It's like the internet has collectively agreed to just like, just kind of sideline it.
Yeah, just kind of look at it with a side eye. Also, I'm looking at our lawyers. Did she actually get sued, or did she just get like a legal threat?
It might have been legal threat.
Okay. For legal reasons, we are not saying that Sarah Zed was sued by What Pumpkin.
Yeah, and do not legal threat us.
Yes, please.
Please do not legal threat us.
We can't even find the pumpkin to, like, send in the money.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently you guys don't know where it is, so...
Yeah, famously, the way you license Homestuck merch is to put money in a pumpkin and ship it to them.
Yeah.
Which is why the Homestuck Plat Fighter never got off the ground.
Heyo!
Which brings us to today's topic. Not a Plat Fighter this time.
Yeah, we're talking about a very, you know, two-dimensional fighter. As opposed to Plat Fighters, which are three-dimensional.
Yeah.
It's left, right, and up.
Yeah. So, it's funny we mentioned Plat Fighters because we're not talking about one today. We talked about one last week on the actual April 13th, which again, the whole temporal aspect of this podcast is really starting to fall apart like Dark Souls 3. To make matters worse, my dog is currently having a little adventure in my room, so if you hear clickety-clacking, then I've failed as an editor. But we're going back, it is Fighting Game Pro. We're going to talk about a traditional fighter in the sense that it is not a platform fighter. It's not a 3D fighter like Tekken or Soul Cal or Naruto Clash of Ninja 4 or Super Naruto Clash of Ninja 4 or Naruto Clash of Ninja Revolution 3, nor is it an arena fighter like Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm.
Or Criticom, or
Kill la Kill F,
King of Fighters 94.
Yeah, no, it is like King of Fighters 98 though. Ultimate Mix.
Ah.
It's not just a traditional fighter though. So traditional fighter is something like Street Fighter. That's the easiest way to put it. You're locked on an axis. Usually up is the jump. And usually back is block, though Mortal Kombat has a guard button, so... But in general, the sort of... Think of the framing of Street Fighter, of two people in sort of a fixed arena, and they take up most of the screen, and you hit each other.
Yeah.
You move left and right. Jumping is usually not something you do constantly, like you do in Plat Fighters. And you have a health bar, and usually other bars.
Bars.
This is sort of the framework of most competitive fighting games. And I don't mean that to be dismissive. Like, people play Mortal Kombat competitively. People play Soul Calibur competitively. Obviously, Tekken is huge in one of the bigger competitive fighting games. But, like, in terms of quantity, I think 2D fighters are more common.
Yeah.
It's weird because, like, trying to define fighting games is so hard because so many fighting games like to play with convention. Not just things like Dive Kick or Footsies that are intentionally, like, reduced or minimized or minimalized. Minimalist. But, like, there are games that straddle the line. Like, even the aforementioned Naruto Clash of Ninja Revolution 3 is a 3D fighter, but it's a sidestepper, which Tekken sort of is as well. And so, like, in those games, you mainly move on a 2D plane, but left and right are sort of, like, rotating.
Yeah.
You don't have full 3D movement the way you would in, like, Devil May Cry, you know?
Yeah. There's even kind of denominations within the purview of 2D fighter. Like, you know, like we said, Street Fighter is probably the most famous example.
Right.
And you have things like King of Fighters as well.
Mm-hmm.
But... you know, even within 2D fighters, it's like, usually you'll have, like, anime fighters, which are 2D fighters, yes, but are typically kind of, like, higher jumps, bigger flashy moves, you know, kind of...
Yeah, more air movement focused.
Yeah.
And more just air focused in general. Wacky powers.
Yeah. You probably... I would even put, like, Blaze Blue and, like, Guilty Gear kind of in its own little category of, like, Arxis fighters.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, it's not... It is kind of an anime fighter and kind of a 2D fighter, but it's also just, like, a big, like, jamboree of scuttlebugs.
Yeah, it's easier to sort of categorize them by developer a lot of times. Like, when you see a French Bread game, you can tell it's a French Bread game. Usually because there's reverse beats and it has really good music. But so, yeah, it's usually hard to sort of categorize them. But there are sort of two categories that I think are pretty omnipresent in the fighting game community. The first is that of the poverty game.
Mm.
Now, let's say you wanted to play Guilty Gear Strive. It costs, like, what, $50, $40 for the base game? And then the DLC is, like, $20 to $30. So you're looking at anywhere from $60 to $100 to get everything for the game to play it against other people using your setup.
Yeah.
Now, normally, the idea is that, you know, really only one person needs to buy the game to play it for friendly matches at a local event. You know, you could just buy the game and be like, hey, I brought Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition. Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition, and everyone will be like, oh, hey, cool, Street Fighter 4, that's cool. I play Rufus in that one. And then, like, at the same time, though, of course, you would need to buy that much for DLC, but that's sort of the way fighting games are priced oftentimes. But what if you're broke and you don't have money, but you want to play fighting games?
I wouldn't know what that life is like.
Well, you have a few sort of venues, one of which is to emulate old games, such as Naruto Clash of Ninja 4 or Fate Unlimited Codes, both of which are aiding games.
Yep. Not Melee, though. Definitely not Melee.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo.
King of Fighters 2002 and 98 are both really big in this regard. Old Sam shows, Third Strike, anything on Fightcade. And then your other one is to play cheap indie games or cheap or free indie games. So the original, not the original, but Melty Blood Current Code, the one before the current one. So it's not current anymore.
well, it's current like the food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the food?
Currents. Have you not heard of Currents?
That's one that's sort of the archetypical poverty game because you could just download it and play it. And people play that a lot. There's also, like, Toho 12.3 Hiso Tensoku.
I'm sorry. Can I actually redo my previous joke real quick?
Yeah.
Well, it's actually current, like the waves of the ocean.
There you go. That's really funny. Classic Galen.
You are going to go back and, you know, just cut that part and put it in there.
Yeah, no, really. It'll be really easy to do.
All right, cool.
Yeah, and I'll make sure I do it. So, you know, you got the poverty games, the cheapo depots. Obviously, there's sort of there's Mugen if you really want to go degenerate.
Mugen is kind of its own beast. It's the everything game.
Yeah, Mugen's an engine to make fighting games in, but people just make shitty characters. For more on that, check out Salty Bet. That's like its own mini episode. But poverty games are generally like what is easy and cheap to play. They're often independent or made by small studios. And they're often mixed quality. They might have some jank, which leads me to the other sort of category, which is kusoge.
Yes.
So here's a bit of a history of kusoge. Kusoge literally translates to shit game. Kuso in game. Kusoge. Shit game. It is a term for games that are so bad, but not bad in a mediocre way or a forgettable way. Bad in a truly, like, boggling, irrational way. The term, it's sort of unknown what exactly the term came from. Most sources say it was from reviewer Jun Miura, referring to the game Iki for the Famicom. So this is an old term. Iki was so bad that he decided to call it a shitty game.
Nice.
Other people commonly attribute it to a review of Takeshi's Challenge.
Oh god, that's a classic.
Yeah, that's a classic kusoge. But both of those games are really bad and really old in terms of video games. Some other famous examples include things like Hong Kong 97.
Oh god, that's an episode Harvester, we don't
kind
do.
Of, but not really. Most Sonic games, Sonic 06 and Shadow the Hedgehog especially.
Yeah.
I think of the games we've covered, Shadow the Hedgehog is definitely kusoge.
Yeah.
I would hesitate to call Piglet's Big Game kusoge because it doesn't have the level of jank. Kusoges usually aren't just bad for, like, one reason. It's like they have bad graphics, design, audio, like, the game plays awful. I guess you could say, like, Big Rig's Over the Road Racing.
Yeah, I would.
Mad Rats.
I would cite, yeah, Big Rig's, Mad Rats.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Bubsy 3D.
Bubsy. Bubsy 3D.
One of the biggest examples.
Can I give a shout out to Minorino's Adventure?
Yeah.
I think, like, kusoge, as sort of my experiences with it, are largely in terms of fighting games, but there is a dedicated community of kusoge single player game appreciators.
Yes.
I want to shout out the Kuso Grande, which is a tournament series where streamers race kusoge blind.
That's
Captain Novalin's a famous one. That's about insulin and diabetes.
Yeah.
The Awful Block on AGDQ and SGDQ tends to be focused on kusoge. And then I also want to shout out Author Blues, who last year started his annual Dashing Through Trash event, where he plays through exclusively kusoge, 30 of them throughout one of the months of the year. I want to say September.
Nice.
Don't quote me on that. Check out Author Blues for that, though.
Ugh, wake me up when it's over, am I right?
I get it. So kusoge are bad, but much like something like The Room, they're so bad they're good in a way.
Yeah. If you're looking for specific examples of fighting game kusoge as well, I would heavily shout out Matt McMuscles is The Worst Fighting Game, which is a series that I have come to just love.
Yeah.
So much. Where he goes over both, like, famous and, like, honestly lesser known examples. Shaq Fu, he did an episode on. Criticom was sort of the impetus for the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mortal Kombat Advance is famously one of the worst ports of Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, but some of these kusoge are just very bad to where nobody really plays them, but there are some that dedicate, like, really, they foster really dedicated communities despite the shittiness because they're ridiculous or fun to play in some way.
Yeah.
For some examples are Dong Dong Never Die, which is like an FMV game of, like, buff muscle men. And there's like a construction worker character. I think they just have a guy in a cauldron like Diogenes. There is also the Hokuto no Ken fighting game. The Fist of the North Star fighting game is another classic one that's sort of spoken of in whispers of legend in the fighting game community, because almost every character in that game has an infinite, and the infinites involve, like, hitting somebody against the ground and they ground bounce a billion times. Look up HNK basketball combo and you might be able to find a good video of that. But sort of one of the advantages of a multiplayer kusoge is that all the people playing the game get to share in the misery. And when something silly happens, everyone gets to share in the joy. And when you're playing a competitive kusoge, it sort of goes from, like, the game has to be completely balanced to everyone has the same access to the same, you know, ridiculous moves and wild options.
Yeah. There is a difference between, like, something that is equally, where, you know, something where it's, you know, heavily imbalanced and it's just kind of unfun, and something where everything is kind of equally broken.
Yeah. And that brings us to today's game, Ultra Fight Dakianta 2. Now, I know what you're thinking. Before you ask, there is no Ultra Fight Dakianta 1.
Good.
So, what is Kianta? How do you explain it?
Well, I would explain it as, imagine if you, the listener, imagine if you had basically no real, like, programming experience, no real art experience, and said, I'm gonna make a fighting game.
Yep. So Kianta, let's get this out of the way. The art is, like, pencil sketches with colored pencil filling them in.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not good art by most senses. You can tell that the artist is really only practiced in drawing girls.
Yeah.
But that makes it enjoyable in sort of an outsider art way.
Yeah, again, very MS Paint.
The music is absolute dog shit, and I love it. It sounds like the worst Rugrats soundtrack if it was trying to be like the Rugrats fighting game.
Oh, man.
Rugrats versus Capcom 3. I'll try that on my grown-up Chucky.
Yeah. My stand, grown-up Chucky. Oh, man, I can't wait to see Ryu punch a baby, and I also can't wait to see fucking Tommy Pickles have a Ryu number of one. Oh, man.
But like, so that all is out of the way. The first thing you'll notice when this game boots up is it's loud and has a lot of flashing lights, so if you're sensitive to that, please do not play the game.
Yep.
Be aware of that. Like, legitimate flashing lights warning. You'll notice that it doesn't have great aspect ratio options, which is part of the fun.
Yep, yep.
You'll hear a loud voice, and then you'll probably, if you watch the intro video, which I highly recommend checking out on YouTube, if you're not going to play this game, because it'll introduce you to all the characters and then some. It'll get you ready. You will understand what the point of Kianta is, what the soul of Kianta is, if you watch the intro cutscene. But then it'll ask you to input a turbo, which is the speed the game plays at. It can go up to 7, which is way too much.
It's really funny.
I recommend keeping it on the default at 2, maybe 3 if you're feeling saucy.
Yeah, I would recommend trying 7 literally once, and then going, ha, and then never doing it again.
Yeah, and then you will hear, almost certainly, the sound effects. Almost all the sound effects in this game are made by the dev's mouth. So, like, when you select something, it goes, bah! I had to, like, turn away from the mic because it would have been too loud.
Yeah, yeah. You had to turn away from the mic to breathe.
Yeah.
To bah.
Every, like, when you move your cursor on character select, every direction has its own sound effect that's a different version of the same mouth noise. I'm pretty sure some of the hit sound effects are just, and I'm pretty sure, like, there's a character who has, like, a jetpack, and it's just the person making fart noises with their mouth.
Yeah.
It's so wild. It's like a scrapbook game, where it's like they cut out pages from their notebook that they doodled in high school, and then recorded themselves beatboxing, and was like, oh, this is the shit.
Yeah.
Okay. But so that's just, like, the set dressing. The characters, by the way, some of them are, like, anthropomorphized animals, but not in, like, an appealing way, like a furry might be.
Yeah.
I realize I say appealing in yeah, ha ha, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, there is, you know, the way that people, that, like, kids draw people with muscles, where you just kind of, like, put balls on them. You just sort of, like, you
put
know.
Balls
you
put them.
Balls on them. You do, like, a little, like, you know, bump, bump, bump. There is a grappler character who's a bear with, like, you know, gloves, whose muscles are just that.
Yeah.
He's a big, like, big hippo looking motherfucker. Or maybe more accurately, he's the Canadian guy from Punch-Out.
Oh, you mean Bear Hugger?
Bear Hugger. Yep. Yeah. He's a big Bear Hugger looking motherfucker with bumpy muscles. And he's great.
Or, like, there's a character named Butobi, who is a cool duck.
Yeah.
He's just, like, imagine just, like, a guy, but with a duck head.
Yeah.
and like regular blue hair, and he's the coolest guy. There's something really fun about how the creator of the game draws faces, especially in like the windscreen, because they're always way more detailed. And for like the girls, it's just, you know, there's like more detail and you can tell that he spends most of his time drawing the girls. But then like for like the male characters, and especially the serious ones, there's just all these like lines and all this detail in increasing, and it's there's no sense of like perspective. Like so many characters just have their face on the side of their head. Like Gyanta, his wind thing is just like his mouth is shifted over to the left side of his face.
Yeah, very, very anime, very, you know.
Yeah, if you've seen those pictures of like an anime character where they have the little divot for their mouth on like the side of their cheek, and then their mouth is in the middle of their head.
Yeah.
It's like that, but better, because there's more detail. It's like, it reminds me of Bobobo.
Yeah.
In Bobobo, Yoshio Sawai, the author of Bobobo, does this thing where he'll put way too much detail into the dumbest panels, and then whenever there's a serious panel, he'll put no detail into it, because like the joke is that they take everything so seriously, and that it does the serious detailed close-up when you don't want it to. That's like this game, except that's your reward for winning.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Also, there's a character who is a dog called Taro, and if you win with him, you get to see his butt.
Which is, of course, a deep reference to Marvel vs. Capcom 3, where Amaterasu has a butthole. I'm not even lying.
Nice.
Real fact. But so, like, we're just talking about the aesthetics. The stages are also great. Characters are great. Some shout-out characters. I want to shout out Hisomi, who's this girl with, like, sleepless eyes and a spider on her head.
Yeah.
And she just kind of wiggles.
Yeah, she's my, I'm not my main. This is a, well, we'll get into that when we explain the mechanics. This is a three-person fighter. But she is my lead, and I love her.
Yeah. I want to shout out Rare and Well Done.
Yeah.
Rare is a robot who is like on speed.
Yeah, he's like PO3 from Inscription, but cooler.
Yeah. And then Well Done is like a Cyclops monkey with too many Popeye muscles in like a 12 pack.
Yeah, he's like meat from Mortal Kombat. He's got like a Titan from Attack on Titan. That's probably a better, less of a deep cut reference.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to shout out, like, well, I've already shouted out the dog.
Mm-hmm.
There is Investigator Azuma, who is a crocodile,
an
alligator cop investigator. And then there's Robo Azuma, who is like 90% of, like, his default sprite is basically 90% of Investigator Azuma, but robot on the head instead, which is so good.
Azuma eats his gun when he wins.
Yeah.
He just goes,
it's like three frames of animation.
Yeah,
it's
blink and miss it. I also want to shout out Zaki Wild, who's just a guy.
Yeah. I wouldn't even be surprised if he looked like the developer, like a self-portrait of the developer.
I don't think it is, though. That's the problem. okay. So like, we need to talk about the mechanics. So the thing about Gyanta that makes it so enjoyable to play is not only does it look like dog shit, but it plays really well in a weird way.
Yeah.
So movement is very fast in this game, very snappy. You can like shimmy left and right very quickly. That's I'm just going to put that out there. Like, how a fighting game moves is super important. And I feel like I explained that on the previous episode. This game's movement's very snappy, even on like the default turbo level. So this game is sort of a team fighter. It is like Skullgirls or CVS2. Where you choose whether you want one, two, or three characters on your team. If you have more characters, each of them has fewer health.
Yeah.
If you have fewer characters, then they have more health. Where if you have one character, they have a ton of health. They can take more hits, but your opponent has three characters. And the math kind of evens out in the end.
I'm sorry that I just left you hanging. I left you out to dry right there. That I should have stepped in, but
yeah,
you were stumbling super hard. And I tripped
down several sets of stairs.
Yeah. I didn't even warn you.
I know. There we go. We got it.
We got it.
So, yeah. When you choose a character, there are six different sort of options you can choose, which determine how you use meter or just general stats. So there is stamina mode, which gives you extra health, speed mode, which gives you extra walk speed, EX mode, which lets you use your super with fewer bars of meter. That's super mode. There's super EX mode, which is stamina plus speed, but you can't use any meter.
Yep.
There is demon mode, where instead of a super, you get a install buff that, by the way, install is the fighting game term for like buffs.
Oh, okay.
It comes from Soul Bad Guy's Dragon install.
Interesting.
You get an install where you can spam EX moves without spending meter, and we'll get to what meter does in a second. Or you can do the mode that's like, you regain health by parrying,
yeah.
But you can't block, I think?
Yes, yeah.
So nobody chooses that one. The way meter works, so let's actually go back to inputs. You have three buttons mainly, A, B, C. A is light attack, B is heavy attack, C is special. You have a grounded special, crouching special, and air special. And you pretty much have grounded, crouching, and air versions for all your other moves. D button is super. So if you have a meter type that lets you access your super, you press a fourth button to use it.
Every character has two supers, I believe.
Yeah, and you can choose which one you use for the fight when you choose the character. Then A plus B is throw, which you can also assign to a button. Throws B blocks. B plus C is K cancel, which is essentially just Roman cancels in Guilty Gear, which is a term for where you spend meter to stop whatever you're doing immediately, and that's it.
Yeah.
This is a really cool mechanic that a lot of fighting games have a variation of, because it kind of immediately introduces a ton of options for a very lightweight and simple mechanic.
Yeah.
The ability to stop what you're doing is simple in that I just explained it in one sentence. You spend meter to stop what you're doing. But, like, there's so many emergent things you can get out of that. If a move moves you closer to the opponent but is unsafe, you can use that to get close and then become free to do whatever. If, like, there's a projectile that has a long recovery frame, you can do the projectile, cancel it, and then do something else while the projectile is moving. If you mess up and attack your opponent with something that's not safe on block, you can just not be unsafe anymore.
Yeah.
You can be free. You can be safer. It is a tool built for creativity in emergent systems, which for a competitive game where you're kind of encouraged to explore the characters you play as, it's really good. That's why so many games have it. But it's not as important in this game, it feels like. There is, and then there's EX moves, which are, I want to say C plus D, but don't quote me on that. But EX moves are a stronger version of your, usually your standing B move, your 5B, as they call it. And it's usually just armored and fast and maybe a bit safer. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Different characters' EX moves might be really good. Some of them aren't as good. There are some characters that prefer to have demon mode so they can spam EX mode. I think Tsukinami is a good example. Because she spin.
She goes spin.
Chihiro is another one who has a grab as his EX move. And since it's an armored EX move, you can just run up to people with armor and grab them in the face. And what are they going to do about it? Jump?
Move?
Yeah.
Guard?
So the game's pretty simple. There is a parry, which is third strike style, where you press forward instead of back at the time that the attack hits you, and you parry, and it gives you a bit of meter. Yay.
Ooh.
Generally hard to do unless you've really spent time with the game. Easy to do on accident, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
It's really important for some characters because you do have a guard bar, your Boko bar. And if you just block attacks too much, your Boko will get binted, and your guard will break, and you'll be dizzy. You don't want your Bokos binted.
Not at all. I believe that when it's when it's broken, it's called a Boko break.
Yeah.
But Boko's Binted is the traditional term.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to anybody in the street and say Boko's Binted, they will understand.
Yeah. The other thing to note is just that the game is very fast. Attacks are very strong, especially against a team of three.
Yeah.
It is very easy for the game to be over in like 10 seconds.
So, yeah, for a bit of idea of scale, each character has varying amounts of health, but on a standard team, which is three team, you're probably going to have somewhere between like 150 and 250 ish. Somewhere within that area, usually more on the higher side if you pick stamina, which is recommended for beginners, and is also just always a good option.
Mm-hmm.
And individual moves will do like 30 damage, you know, 12 damage, but like an entire like set of 12 damage. Like, you know, individual projectiles will do, you know, really, really decent damage. And so, you know, the playing field is pretty low, and then the moves themselves are pretty high in that playing field.
Yeah, I think most supers do 100 or more damage.
Yeah.
I know, like, Inspector Azuma, his straight shot super is, like, frame 4 or something.
Yeah.
It's full screen, and it does, like, 100 damage on hit.
My main team was essentially developed in direct parallel to Marissa's, where I specifically have my last character be Taro the dog, because I would keep dying to just like a full 3-bar gunshot, because you just can't do anything about it.
My favorite thing is one of Ozma's wing quotes is evidently you've been outsmarted.
Yeah.
So I jump in, round start, press the D button, shoot him in the head 5 times, and I'm like, yes. I am so smart right here, right now.
Just as according to Keikaku.
But yeah, the dog can low profile, which means to go under the attack, because he's a short little dog.
He's a little dog.
And then he pisses on the ground.
He pisses on the ground. If you're positioned right, he pisses on the other character.
Mm-hmm.
Health meter.
Mm-hmm. Very, very important. You could parry the gunshot if you press forward 5 times in the correct timing.
Yes, which you might have to learn how to do.
Daigo was able to do it like 17 times for that one clip.
I'm not surprised. I get it is consistent timing, so if you know how to do it once.
Yeah, just like Chun-Li's super art.
Yeah.
So this is a team-based game, and team-based fighters, there's a few ones. The main ones are Marvel vs. Capcom, and King of Fighters. And those two actually are really different in terms of what the team actually does. And Kianta really leans more towards the KOF side. See, in Marvel and games similar to it, like Skullgirls and BlazBlue, BB Tag, a lot of what people call versus games, you have assists, where when a character is not on the field, you can call them in to do an attack, and then they go back out. This kind of isn't the same thing in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. They have sort of the opposite, where instead of calling in a character that doesn't attack and then leaves, you tag into a new character. Your pre-existing character finishes their attack and then tags out. That's sort of how it works in Street Fighter X Tekken as well. So it's usually one of those two, but in those types of games, the interplay between characters is more readily available and comes out in the middle of a match. Whereas in King of Fighters, it is pretty much just like you fight one-on-one, and then when your first character loses, your next character comes out.
You essentially have like 3 or 2 health bars.
Yeah, with each health bar having a different move set.
Yeah.
Now, in both of those games, both KOF games and versus games, your meter carries over between characters. So like in KOF, you know, you'll start with less than a bar of meter, but then by the time your second character comes out, you'll usually have at least a bar and a half, if not 2.
Yeah.
So when it comes to team building structure, the strategy is generally like character one is a character that is good at getting in on the opponent, or is a safe character, good at building meter in some way. Character two is the sort of main character you'll be playing the game with. They have good ways to spend meter on damage or setups or things like that. And then the third character is your anchor. They are better at cleaning things up, maybe a little safer, usually made to just take out the last character on the opponent's team, or something that's good at surviving.
Yeah.
So, like, when I played KOF, I kind of just put my best character last because I was the best at neutral with them, and so I was like, well, if I'm down to my last leg, I should probably put my best character there. Though I don't know if that's exactly, you know, the best practice. In versus games, there's a lot other things to consider. Like in Marvel 3, for example, there's the matter of, do I want to tag into this character from my super, or do I do aerial combos this way? In Marvel especially, you tend to have the character who dumps meter be your third character, because you'll just end, they'll just come out with five bars of meter. Marvel 3 also has X Factor, which is a big comeback mechanic. Similarly, in Marvel 2, Marvel 2 is weird. Marvel 2 team building is a whole other deal. It's like there's like six characters that are really good, but the ways they're really good are kind of the same and also different. And it's too much to get into right now. Why did I even bring it up?
Okay.
But anyways, back to Kianta.
Yeah. So Kianta.
I haven't really talked to, like, top players of this game, so this is all just our general opinions. Personally, my team building is obviously three characters I like, with all the meter dumping being on the third one, and usually the first one is just a character that I can build meter with.
Yeah.
Somebody who I don't really want to spend meter on. So I play Hatoyan, who is a ninja. She's not very good. But damn, can I play neutral with her by walking left and right. I can shimmy with her. Then my second character is Nanatsu, who is like Ladybug Girl. And she has some decent neutral tools. She has some little projectiles. And I can spend meter on her if I want to, but I usually don't plan on it. Because I play Azuma in my last slot, who I just dump all the meter on the gun shot. And then I eat the gun.
Whole Horse's Emperor gun.
Yeah.
So this started out with me just literally trying every single character. Speaking of which, I have a list here and I just want to shout out a couple of things. For example, there is Kianta and
Gianta.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. Kianta and Gianta, who's the Azuma. And then there's Katana Kianta.
You mean Akuma?
Or the Akuma. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. And then there's Dr. K.
Yeah, Dr. K is a different cat, I'm pretty sure.
Probably, but I think that's pretty funny. There is Michelle, who is like a cat lady with a sword. And then there's M. Michelle, who's like Mask Michelle.
Yeah.
Who's like a tuxedo mask version of Michelle.
Evil Michelle.
Evil Michelle, who also has a super called Michelle L.
Mm-hmm.
We
already mentioned Rare and Well Done.
Yep, Rare and Well Done. There's twins Maso and Masako. Masao sucks. Masako's pretty good.
And yeah. And then there's Kinoko. We didn't even talk about Kinoko.
Kinoko is in a game of fucked up characters, Kinoko is literally the one character who completely breaks everything.
So,
because she isn't like a traditional character.
Yeah.
She's a joke character in the truest sense of the word.
So to explain, her super, the Rockfall super, makes rocks spawn from the top of the stage. For the rest of the round, until one of them dies.
Mm-hmm.
Both players can get hit by the rocks, including Kinoko. They're unblockable, and some of the rocks insta-kill. So have fun with that.
Yeah.
There is one of the great things about Kusoge is that they're really fun to take to locals, because people will get distracted by them, and it becomes this social event of gathering round the Kusoge setup. like a month ago or so, somebody had just, for no good reason, bought Phantom Breaker Omnia, which is a garbage fighting game, barely enjoyable, very Kusoge. But six people were gathered around the setup. Only two people could play at a given time. Most of them didn't want to play. They just wanted to spectate the absolute, you know, wonder of Phantom Breaker Omnia. It has Kurisu from Steins Gate. That's the only good thing about it. And similarly, like, like, so I think a lot of these games, though, they will have, like, one character that sells the game.
Yes.
The elevator pitch character, the demo mode character, the, like, attract mode character. For DFCI, for example, Dengeki Bunko Fighting Climax Ignition, one of STL's best games.
Nice.
As in, the games we're best at, and that has the most players here. Tomoka is the character that does this because she turns the opponent into a basketball and shoots a three-pointer.
Right, right.
In Kyanta, it's Kinoko.
Yeah.
Kinoko is, like, something that the game is known for.
It is so good. To talk briefly on my my own team, right now I found Hisomi as my lead with the, not the demon mode, but the other mode, the Super EX mode. I quite like as a lead to build meter, because I don't really like either of her supers, but I love her as a character. She's a very fun, like, zoner who's pretty good at getting in and then just kind of wrecking house once she gets her zone out. For my second, I end up bringing out Robo Azuma, who is really good at using some of that meter and getting in. My third right now is Taro, because again, this is a team that's almost entirely built to counter Matthew, but I could definitely see myself doing other characters as well. Kakorin is a fun one, Senduo is a fun one, Michelle is honestly a fun one. But Taro, I do quite enjoy because he farts fire. One of his supers is he farts a big fire, and one of his other supers is he makes a fart fire, like, ground that does a lot of damage as you stand in it.
Yeah.
And
he
so
also spit bone.
He do spit bone.
And the bones just last forever until they hit you.
Yo, he's spitting bone.
Yo, he's spitting bone.
I could definitely see myself getting into some of the jank, though, with, like, Tsukinami, who's got the... if you have the one mode, she can just spin to win.
Yeah, the demon mode.
Yeah, the demon
mode. I know a guy who does that, and it's so annoying.
It's really annoying, but it's really funny.
I really like Katana Kyanta, who plays like Kai, but his thing is that he just has a giant fireball that is really big, hard to jump over, kind of fills the entire screen in some ways, and is very lasting, does like three hits, slow moving. Just absolute wondrous move.
I feel like there's something to say as well, which is this is coming 45 minutes in, but when we call this a Kusoge, we mean that with every, like, love in our hearts.
Yes.
There are Kusoge that suck.
Mm-hmm. Like Phantom Breaker Omnia.
Like Phantom Breaker Omnia, like Hong Kong 96 or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, this is a Kusoge that is great. This is a The Room of fighting games style fighting game.
Yeah,
like this is
like the Neil Breen of fighting games.
Okay, here is possibly the most controversial statement I'm going to say. This is an excellent fucking fighting game to learn 2D fighters.
Yeah,
I say that as famously we have famously stated, this is probably one of the top two things people know about us other than our names, is that we decided to do this because we thought it would be really funny, because you are pretty damn well versed in fighting games, and I am versed in some and complete dog shit in others. I have no experience in others.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not bad at them, I'm just untrained. Thank you, Leon Massey. But this is unironically, like...
Sorry, can I say that again? Thank you, Leon Massey.
Yeah, thank you, Leon Massey.
If you want to come on and talk about the PS2 game World Tour, the Razor Scooter game, we would love to have you.
Hell yeah.
Or add Aggressive Inline.
Oh, Aggressive
Those are
Inline.
Your two options.
Yep.
Fucker.
Put that one on the board. I'm going to have to go through these and find out all of these because I kind of want to tweet them out.
Yeah.
Banksy, offer's still open. Mark Echo's getting up. But here's the thing. This might sound a little overwhelming. I would argue that getting into even, like, Smash is a little more overwhelming, because something like Smash, you need to care about specific moves. With Smash, there are, like, you know, there are characters who have much better bears than fairs. There are characters who have, you know, like, just Smash attacks that you never want to do, and sometimes characters that have Smash attacks that you actually want to use as an option. And so to learn a character, you have to learn one individual aspect of this. Kyanta, you certainly could put in that effort, and I'm willing to bet that there are people who do, but realistically, most of what I do is mash the buttons.
Yeah.
Like, I know that, for example, Hisumi has three different projectiles based on whether I'm, you know, crouching, standing, or in the air. And then aside from that, she has a light button and a heavy button, and I just kind of press them when I need to, and I get progress done.
That's the thing. So this game is great to mash in a very enjoyable way that will bring a smile to your face. It is very easy to die, but I think the ability to GG go next is pretty good.
Yeah.
The ability to just be like, okay, I died there, let's try that again. The inputs are pretty simple, all things considered. There's no motion inputs like quarter circles or half circles or dragon punches or down inputs or charge inputs or hold a button a long time and then release it inputs.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple input-wise. Even more so than Smash, because there's not even like forward specials. There's just standing, crouching, and jumping.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, input-wise, it's easy. I think you've touched on a big point that in different fighting games, sort of, when you think about a character in terms of gameplay, you often think about them in terms of what their moves do. So, like, to go back to an example I used in the previous episode, I play Heyun in Guilty Gear, and I don't know what all of his moves do, but I can tell you that, like, Heyun's important moves are 2A, crouching A, or crouching P, rather, because that's just a fast move to mash out of to catch the opponent. 5H, or standing H. I'll explain the numbers next episode.
I was about to say, like, have we explained
the... I'll explain the numbers all next episode, where it matters more, which is a good, like, long-range move. Crouching H, which is my anti-air. Forward H, which is my surprise I got you button. And then, like, standing K and crouching K, which are my good safe pokes. There's a lot of other moves that I didn't mention there, but most of them only exist in combos, or they I just don't need to press them when I can press my better moves.
Yeah.
I listed like 5 or 6 moves there, and I didn't really mention my specials. But the point is more so that, like, move lists look really complicated, but unless you're at the highest level, you don't have to worry about many of them, and you just have to worry about a few. And from there, you can, like, get a feel for what the purpose of those moves is. Kyanta just doesn't have many moves, and each move generally has a purpose, which means that, like, A, you don't have to think about what moves are bad and good. You'll either find out really quickly because you'll die, or you'll be able to get a good grasp on it quickly.
Yeah.
B, it means that you're sort of forced to use those moves more often and get a feel for how they work and when they're good. And that leads to the fact that it's a little easier to get used to the, like, post-learning stage of what the moves do into intentionally using the moves for their purpose.
Yeah.
This is intentionality. It's a big part of fighting games and any competitive game, really. Any game, really, is... Once you know how to do things, it's being able to put them into practice on command as part of your strategy or your game plan. And I think this is one of the hardest parts of learning a new fighting game, because you often have a, you know, list of moves you have to remember, what each one does, and then you have to think about how those are applied, and only then can you start learning, like, matchup-specific things.
Yeah.
And that's when you're able to really get into the weeds of, like, the chess match part of it, you know? Like, when you learn when you should do a crouching jab versus a crouching kick in neutral, like, when you're starting the game, you might not know that, but once you do, you can use that to your advantage, and you get to the point where you're thinking about, like, the strategy, the tactics, positioning, all those cool things. And I think, like, there is a lot of fighting games want to have all the cool moves, and there's a lot of tradition, and I don't think it's bad that there are fighting games that still do, like, motion inputs, 6 buttons, stuff like that, because there's a good reason to have variety. But there are there's been sort of an attempt for beginner friendly games that lighten the sort of information load at first to create intentionality quicker.
Yeah.
Because once you learn the strategy for one game, it becomes easier to apply it to other ones, like a language or a programming language. You learn the fundamentals. Now, I kind of want to give a whisper in to Fantasy Strike. David Serlin aside, Fantasy Strike tried to do something very similar, where, like, health is simple, mechanics are simple, moves are simple, motions are simple, but it kind of ended up becoming more it became less beginner friendly because like everything started to go towards like rock, paper, scissors, because David Serlin likes making rock, paper, scissors. And a lot of attacks had a lot of recovery, and it wasn't like fun to mash in. And it just like there's a difference between casual player friendly as like low execution and casual player friendly as like button mashing is fun.
Yeah.
And that's where Kyanta really shines, is it aims to get people into fighting games, not just by being simple to control, but by being just funny and charming and silly. And yeah, that's honestly like the best way to get people into something.
I want to kind of even shout out that like I feel like part of why it's fun is that it's not just, I feel like this is the kind of game you can really enjoy from basically any skill level, because if you don't know a whole lot about fighting games, or at least, you know, or like, you know, maybe like me, where you have experience with some, but, you know, 2D fighters are alien to you, you're immediately going to really enjoy some of the, I mean, the wacky characters. The art is already wonderful. It's just like some of the dumb shit that the moves do. And then once you're at a high level, you can even more appreciate some of the dumb shit that the moves do, where it's like, you know, it's just like, you know, wait, sorry, that's, you know, all the way across the stage. That's five shots in a row all the way across the stage.
It's plus on block.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so dumb that like, I feel like it can be essentially universally enjoyed no matter how good you are at it. Because yeah, even if you get to a really high level, like at a certain point you just have to stop and laugh at the stupid sound effects and the beautiful art and yeah, the you know, the really silly characters. It's very fun.
And I want to reiterate, people play this in like tournaments, and I love that. I would enter a tournament for this game. It's sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just also this like shitty mess of a game that we all love. And I think that's to be appreciated and, you know, to really explain. It's a shame that this isn't more well known in some degrees, because like fighting games are only now, I think, breaking back into mainstream. They were mainstream in the arcade days with, you know, early Mortal Kombat, early Street Fighter. And then they kind of petered out around the time of, like, Street Fighter 4.
Yeah.
Then they became popular again in terms of, like, hobbyists, people who play fighting games. But only recently are they becoming this big thing again, with especially Guilty Gear Strive.
Yeah.
Being, like, you know, introducing people to fighting games. And now, like, Street Fighter 6 coming out is going to be huge. But, like, those are so many layers of, like, being in the know and being into fighting games removed from Kyanta. And I wish more people knew about Kyanta, because it's just so dumb good.
Yeah, yeah.
I love Kusoge. Not just fighting games, but, you know, I'm a big fan of Shadow the Hedgehog. It's, yeah, like, my 15th favorite game of all time.
Which is still insane.
But, like, but it's a good Kusoge. It's so shitty. It's enjoyable. It's looped back through an underflow error.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that makes me a broken person. No, maybe it does. But I also think, like, there is value in things that are otherwise bad in... To some extent, it's better to be appreciative of it than cynical about it.
Yeah.
You know, gone are the days of tearing into a bad game simply for being garbage.
Yeah, we're in sort of a I wouldn't say Scott the Waz era, because Scott the Waz is still kind of someone who talks about shitty games, but he does talk about a lot of very good games.
We're post that guy with the glasses.
Basically, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there's the time where ripping into games was, like, the popular thing, but I feel like, maybe not entirely, there's still a lot of YouTubers that do this, but, like...
AVGN's still around, but, like, well,
I mean,
you know.
Yeah, but, like, I think there is a lot of value in... the weird games that would otherwise be laughed at for the sake of a bit. I want to shout out, like, Thor High Heels, for example.
Yeah.
Who has really devoted a lot of time to weird and janky games.
Yeah.
His videos, I especially want to shout out his weird fighting games, because that is sort of the thesis of Kusoge.
Yeah. I would if Brutal Moose did video game content still, I would basically shout out Brutal Moose as well. The few videos he's done over video games, that especially like really obscure dumb ones, have been very positive, and he has literally made a point of like, in my early days I might have, you know, ripped into this, but honestly I appreciate these really dumb little obscure things.
Mm-hmm.
I want to also just say, like, Kianta is wonderful if you're like a creator, because like Kianta is clearly made by somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of experience in a lot of fields. I'm not going to say is bad at things, because, well, at the end of it, they made a great fighting game.
Yeah.
Like, they clearly, you know, were not really trained in art, were not really trained in, you know, programming, maybe. But, like, at the end of it, they were like, I'm just gonna make something. And they did, and it's really fun. And so, like, you know, there is Kusoge where, like, I feel like the question is, why? And this is one where I see it, and I feel like it's essentially a thesis statement of why not.
Yeah, exactly. You too can make a game that is good, even though it's not good.
Yeah.
Because it's still good, despite being bad. But it's not bad if it's bad. It's okay. That was my Thor High Heels impression. So, yeah, I think that about does it. I think we've shouted out as much as we can.
Oh god, yeah, let's see. Reverend is a pretty good YouTuber. Hazel. Oh, we've already talked about Hazel.
Big Yellow. They do fight game video. By the way, I've learned that if you make fighting game video essays on YouTube, that's the easiest way to get comment engagement.
Nice.
Because hundreds of people will say how wrong you are. So we should have been making this a video.
Oh, damn it.
All right. But thank you for listening. You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like, on, you know, like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts. Any of those, give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review, let us know how we're doing, let us know what you'd want to see us cover, or just things you think we might like that we should check out. You can follow us on Twitter at NetSurferPro, where we tweet out little teasers on upcoming episodes, as well as notifications for when our new episodes are coming up. You can follow me on Twitter at Twakaroo, TWAKAROO, where I tweet my takes, my what I've been playing, sort of. Lately, it's been a lot of desktop dungeons that I've been tweeting about. But you can also follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack, where I stream weekdays from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time. And two announcements. So if this goes up at the correct time, then this Saturday, the 22nd of April, will be the first NetSurfer Presents Matthew Marissa Tries to Explain the Lore of Coheed and Cambria.
Yes, I am so fucking excited. You have no idea.
So if you're interested in learning about the lore of Coheed and Cambria, which we may have to cover sometime this year, check that out. I'm really excited, kind of nervous to get things wrong, but I am excited. I've never done a lore lecture, and this has been sort of a long-term goal.
Yep.
I'm really excited to do it. And then after that, May 1st through 31st is Mega May, where on my Twitch channel I will be playing through Mega Man 1 through 11, Mega Man X through 6, and if enough money is raised, I will be playing through Mega Mari, Street Fighter X Mega Man, Nezumi Man, and of course, if enough money is raised, Mighty Number 9. And that is in service of the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, the JDRF, which funds type 1 diabetes and diabetes awareness and research, especially. A lot of advancements have come from them in the various laboratories they fund. And I am, you know, always very glad to support them and raise money for them. So if you're interested in donating to a good cause while also watching me play some good games and some bad games and some Kusoge, then check out my streams throughout the month of May. It's Mega May.
Yeah.
On Twack's channel.
Even if you're an anime fan, this is one prom night you don't want to miss.
Sick.
As for myself, you can find me on Twitter and on TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GALENWLS0N. I post my hot takes and sometimes videos talking about little topics that I enjoy. I've usually been tagging them as NetSurferPro just to try and get that brand up, and I should be I should really put up some sounds of NetSurfer Pro. That's kind of been my job, and I've been slacking off on it. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, but why follow me there when you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire, where, I don't know, I've been thinking about streaming more often than not. I should really, you know, buckle down and do that.
I'm thinking about streaming is like, everyone thinks about streaming. Yeah. Streaming piss!
Oh!